welcome to Chef Bill's Table. I'm your host, Bill Kinslow. I'm the chef at Jake's Restaurant here in Flemington, New Jersey. Getting together every Monday, talk about food and beverages and holidays, or anything else that crosses our mind during the week. Thinking of meal solutions, next week, Jody from Dream Dinners will be here at the table telling us about their little business here. I shouldn't say the word little. I'm not sure the scale of it. It's been around for a bunch of years where I guess families can go in and plan their menus and cook their food and package it up to use later on in the week. And in the fall, I know, for me anyway, I always like the bounty of vegetables. Most of the time in this country, we don't eat that greater variety of proteins as far as meats and poultry. A lot of seafood varieties out there, but most of us, for practical reasons or reasons of taste, we don't, unless we're on the coast, we don't always consume a lot of seafood. Seafood's very versatile, but vegetables are where you can really change things up. So this week, I'm going to talk about some new things we're doing at the restaurant and get into the fall vegetables. I like fall because we still have that the last of the summer. For instance, last week we had the last good peppers and great tomatoes, and I did a Greek salad, which takes very little lettuce. It's mostly the vegetables: peppers, onions, cucumbers, tomatoes. And we had a barrel of Kalamata olives. I had some feta cheese, so it was a no-brainer. Served it with some grilled scallops or grilled shrimp, either one. Nice way to celebrate the last of summer's bounty. That besides what to do with all the zucchini and eggplant, right? You always have to figure that out. But if you do grow your own, and that's always the problem with harvesting. It all comes at once. You wait and wait and wait, and then bang, it's all there, and then, we can't use it quick enough. Farmers planting row crops plan differently. They'll plant different fields at different times, try to stagger them throughout so the harvest doesn't all come at once. And that normally works out, but if there's a little glitch in between, some cold weather or too much rain holds up either planting or harvesting, then sometimes you'll see in the market I don't want to say shortages, but prices might go up. Supply might be a little interrupted for some reasons. Even though things are grown all over this country, there's still things, the weather, you can't predict the weather, or you can't predict, we can try to predict, but we can't change it. So this week, actually, thinking of the different vegetables and thinking of proteins, I can't really ignore the news now with all the hype about the impossible foods and Beyond Burgers and the big demand going on. I guess supplies are short. Very expensive product. And these companies now, meat substitutes have been around for decades. When I first started, second hotel I worked in, there was called TVP, textured vegetable protein, or textured soy protein. We used to call them beef crumbles. And that's what they looked like. They looked like little pieces of ground cooked beef. And it was used as an extender, sometimes for nutritional reasons. People did have to watch cholesterol, or chose to, or vegetarian. They said, want to make chili, or I want to make a meat sauce. I think the hotel where I found some in the freezer, I think they probably used it to stretch out maybe staff meals or something like that. It was right after the beef shortage in the early 70s where everybody was on allocation. It was very hard to get supplied. Prices were going up. There was a boycott after that. It seems 70s were the decade of shortages anyway. We had gas shortage, beef shortage, always something going on. And people forget how you know, I think times are tough now, but there were 60s and 70s where we went through some hard things. So anyway, the beef, the textured vegetable protein, of course, you know, it kind of looked like meat, didn't really taste like meat, but it was always used in as a way to enhance the protein content of other foods also. And it was easy. Now, these burgers that are out and sausages are probably 2.5 to 3 times as expensive as ground beef or ground pork or even ground chicken or turkey. But it's highly processed. They've made the product taste like a hamburger, if you will. It's close. It tastes like a very inexpensive one. We're selling the Beyond Burger at Jake's. We use a larger one than most of the chains use. I think they use a 4 ounce. We use a 6 ounce, and it's a premium priced product. And people, you know, they're choosing it. I mean, nutritionally, it's made from vegetables, so there's no cholesterol in it. But the way these are processed to have the kind of the mouthfeel, the texture, and the flavor of meat, they need to add a lot of oil. There's tropical oil, canola oil. There's coconut oil. If we try to make this a substitute for our beef hamburgers, which nutritionally, again, you're saving the cholesterol, but there's a lot of salt, and there's a huge ingredient list that has to go on. And so one company uses beet juice to make it look red. Another one uses heme, something that's actually found in protein cells. So you want that red color. And I don't know. I see this trend toward when you talk about farm to table, about organic, about all natural, about the shortest ingredient list, which I kind of go by, the less processed, the better. And now along comes a product that's highly processed, and it's supposed to substitute for the meat that we all enjoy. And I understand from a lifestyle choice, a personal choice, you know, the livestock industry has gotten, you know, gets a bad rap for some things. Of course, the greenhouse gases and the pollution, the treatment of animals and all this stuff. And, you know, the ranchers, I mean, they don't do things foolishly. I mean, yes, they're in to make profit, but they do take care of the land and they take care of the animals. We want to make sure they're not sick. I mean, we have plenty of enforcement to make sure that the quality is there and the safety. In a country, I think it was Brazil had a problem. Something was wrong. Their countries were refusing to buy their product. Inspectors weren't doing their job. Something happened in the supply line there. And we have a very safe, in spite of, you know, when we do have an outbreak and accidents happen, mistakes happen, but for the most part, we've got a very good, safe food supply. But now we're taking some, you know, we wanted to go closer to the source and eliminate a lot of processing, and now along comes this highly processed product that, as I say, you know, flavor-wise, I mean, yeah, you can't really substitute. I mean, even a blind tasting, you would know the difference, but you've got something that's very expensive, and if it's supposed to feed a lot of people, I don't know. Only the well-off can afford it right now. Now, I understand it's just starting out. They need to get their supply chain in order. They need to be able to get their contracts with the producers of the product they use, the soy, the oils, the pea protein. They have to get people to grow it. I don't know if they anticipated that it would take off like this, but I don't know if people are just looking for a change or if it's jumping on the next thing. But we'll see how it plays out. But there's many companies that have made vegan or vegetarian options for years, and they were never structured exactly. I guess a product like tofurkey or something is supposed to look like a turkey breast, or I don't think the texture, but some, you know, with the flavorings, I mean, they make it taste kind of like meat. But for me, you know, I would always do that as a chef. Oh, I've got to make vegetarian food, but I want to make it kind of appear or remind people of meat. And then realizing that people that are vegetarians or like vegetables, they like the flavor of them. They like the texture of vegetables. They're not looking for something that tastes like meat. So this is this niche product that for people that want the taste and flavor of the, let's say, the hamburger or the sausage they always ate, but they don't want the cholesterol, and they want it somehow, okay, it's plants, it's a little better for the planet. And yes, you know, if in a perfect world, we would not consume as much meat. Instead of, you know, growing all this grain to feed cattle, we could feed people. It takes 7 pounds of grain to put a pound of meat on the hoof. That's why chicken is so popular. It's quicker, they mature quicker, they take a lot less feed. Pork is popular for the same reason than the beef, and takes a long time. And, you know, through breeding, we've gotten it to taste very good. We've got it consistent. We've, you know, like anything else, you domesticate a product, and you start trying to feed the masses. You get, you know, standardization, and you get sometimes, well, we like consistency. We want everything to be predictable and kind of taste the same. Back when you were just, you know, rolling the dice, you might have a steak or something or a pork roast. Oh, that was very good. And the next one you got might taste a little bit different. Wouldn't taste bad, but it might not be always the same. But we've managed to do that with our livestock, with our crops, vegetables, tomatoes, for example. You know, unless you get heirlooms or get some, like we just finished our nice Jersey tomatoes, certain varieties will have different flavors. But for the most part, they're grown to be shipped and packed easily and all ripen at the same time. And, you know, because we have to feed a lot of people. And so there's, you know, there's an upside and a downside if we want to provide inexpensive food, which I think, you know, is something we all would like. You know, in this country, the bounty that we have, that we shouldn't have to spend a ton of money on food. But it turns out, you know, if you want to eliminate all the risk and everything, it's got to be standardized. And also, it's like most businesses, it gets big. The family farms are now, I mean, there's some are, you know, there's a little bit coming back. People have decided that this is what I want to do. But it's hard work. And we don't have that many people in agriculture anymore. You know, just like manufacturing, these jobs. I know the growers that I buy from, he's still hard-pressed to find staff, find people that want to go out. It's hard work. It's good work. You know, feel pleasantly tired at the end of the day, and you don't really have to, you can cancel your gym membership because you'll be outside exercising, but people aren't choosing that lifestyle anymore. You know, the rural communities are kind of withering up. Everything has gone to the cities, and there aren't that many the high percent of the population involved in agriculture anymore. So we've got this, the Beyond Meat, which after the break here, we'll delve a little bit more into it. But then on the brighter side, what we're cooking now at Jake's, and also, you know, for seasonal, some vegetables, some tips and ideas that you might like. And go on from there. We'll be back at the table in a couple of minutes.
Folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Sheffield's table. So wrapping up, so the beyond are impossible, and there's many companies out there rushing to compete, so that should help bring prices down a little bit. And as I say, you know, it's probably not the thing you're going to want to eat every day, just like meat. Again, it's meant to mimic the nutritionally ground meat or sausage, and except for the cholesterol, again, if you want to save cholesterol, go ahead. But a lot of sodium, and they say, you know, the processing, and we'll see how things work. If they're using a coconut oil, and maybe, you know, coconuts get scarce all of a sudden. If you try, you know, it's the problem that happens with big companies, is that they use a few products and can put a real strain on the market. And if it's something that takes a while to grow, or especially in our business, if it's a food product, you know, it could hold things up for a while. And I say, you know, if you want, cattle, livestock, meat, protein, I mean, there's no better way to get nutrition into ours. It's very nutrient-dense, let's say, especially with the protein. But for the most part, we're over-nutritioned in this country anyway. Not saying that there's people that don't have, scarcity, but for the most part, there's plenty of food around. I think we just have to get it all to the people. We make plenty, a lot of excess that's consumed or wasted, and we just need to figure that part out first before we start trying to produce more. But if you go back, which it's hard to turn the pages back, but, you know, it was a family farm, and you just produced, and subsistence farming, it was called, you know. Everybody kind of just did their own. You know, I don't know if we can achieve that anymore. I don't know, is there enough land in the country for all the people we have, or even globally? There's areas of the world that barely subsist. There's not enough arable land, or there's not enough moisture. So a lot of issues to decide there. But in the meantime, we're enjoying Oktoberfest, and kind of the opposite of what we were just talking about was, we're featuring all the nice German sausages, and we did a show on it a few weeks ago. We started the 23rd of September, And I just got in some nice smoked pork chops from Schaller Weber. Beautiful, beautiful product. Not cheap, very expensive. When you think of, you know, pork chops as being, again, the, you know, something ordinary and not too much money. These are well-trimmed, but they have to be cured, and then they have to be smoked, so they're fully cooked. And it's like a very, very fine ham. And, of course, from the loin, so there's not quite as much fat in it. You get the nice loin and tenderloin on the chop. And we just warm it up with some white wine. I don't even throw it on the grill. I don't want to destroy the texture and the flavor. But nice cure and light smoke, great product. And we made some braised red cabbage. And, boy, I tell you, you appreciate when you make it from scratch, you really appreciate the stuff you can buy in a jar or the can, the pickled sweet and sour red cabbage. I made some. It was very good. Again, without just like sauerkraut, when you take the fresh stuff and braise it rather than open up a can, you do get, you know, different flavor, different texture. But I took the shredded cabbage and started to saute it with some onion and a little canola oil. And then I added some apple cider. Some recipes may call even for grated apples or chunks of apples in there, but I used, you know, good local cider and started cooking it down. Of course, the moisture comes out and you get the nice deep red color. Now, but it takes a while to cook cabbage from raw. Makes you appreciate the sauerkraut or the pickled varieties you can buy already done. And then, of course, there's vinegar and sugar. Now, the cider, as it reduces, provides some sweetness. And I used cider vinegar, keeping with the apple theme. And I did have to add a little. I waited till the end and corrected the sweet and sour aspect of it. You know, it was really taking a surprising amount of vinegar. And then to balance out the acidity, I did put a little brown sugar in because the cider provided, you know, a good amount of sweetness, but you really want sweet and sour to come through. And a little bit of salt, a little pepper. And I said, I need one more thing. And I put a pinch of cloves in there. And I know some recipes may call for juniper and other traditional German seasonings, but a pinch of clove, instead of putting a whole clove and then trying to fish it out, just at the end, really topped it off. Very nice compliment to the smoked pork chop, in a little sweet and sour, going along with the salty and the smoke of the ham. Very good dish. And we're doing the currywurst. I brought in some Bauernwurst now that October's in full swing. And the Bauernwurst is a smoked sausage, but coarser ground than a knackwurst. You think of knackwurst kind of like a big hot dog, beef or beef and pork. This is a pork sausage, but it's coarser ground, flavored a little differently, a little marjoram and mustard, I believe, and then it's smoked. So if you think of the texture of a bratwurst, but a lot different flavor, and then smoking that, that's what you get. So we do the currywurst, which is big street food in Berlin, and I guess it's everywhere, the currywurst shops. And they'll probably use a bratwurst or a knackwurst. I like it with the Bauernwurst. I think a smoked sausage works very well with currywurst. And currywurst is simply it's a curried ketchup. And it seems strange, right? Oh, we never put, you're not going to put ketchup on hot dogs. But this comes off more like almost like a barbecue sauce. So you have your ketchup, and some recipes call you for you're actually kind of making the ketchup from scratch, with the tomatoes and the sugar and the vinegar and then the clove, allspice, some of the seasonings in there. But this one I found a fairly straightforward recipe using prepared ketchup. And it needs a fair amount of curry powder in it. Do it to taste, but you actually want to make it not taste like ketchup. So Worcestershire sauce goes in there, some honey for sweetness, chili powder, a lot of paprika. If you like it spicy, you could use a little bit of cayenne or Hungarian. I used the nice Spanish paprika. And it gets this deep, dark red color. You need a little bit of water, too, because, of course, ketchup is thick. And as you simmer it, it's going to reduce a little. You want it to be able to pour or squeeze out of a bottle easily. And let it simmer for a few minutes until all the flavors come together. And you've got this, let's say, this rich, deep red sauce. So we take the Bauernwurst, and they're normally, the sausages for currywurst are oftentimes cut into little coins and browned. Always served with French fries. You could, I guess, put it on a roll as a sandwich, but it's really, it's good with the fries. Because, again, you got curry ketchup. So we notch it almost all the way through at maybe 3/4-inch intervals and then bake it in a very, very hot oven. It only takes about 3 minutes. The sausage is cooked, so what it does, it kind of curls around and fans out, kind of like a Hasselback potato. And so it gets, you know, it's got the brown, crispy outside. It's got, you know, the inside is cooked through. And you just cut off little pieces. Now we put that curry ketchup over it and then dust it with more curry powder. And really interesting, and it's you could say pick different sausages for it. Knackwurst and bratwurst would probably work, but I like the Bauernwurst. So we just started that today. So trying to continue on with Oktoberfest. The schnitzels are selling like they always do. The chicken schnitzel and Jaeger schnitzel is made with the pork loin, flattened out. It looks like a big veal cutlet. In fact, if somebody wanted it done like a veal parmesan, it turned out pretty well. You know, if you're not into veal or it's too expensive, you can always use pork loin or tenderloin as a substitute. But the cutlets, you know, it's thought of as German or Austrian, the schnitzel, Wiener schnitzel. But the Japanese cooking, tonkatsu, there's places that just have breaded products. And there's very good, you know, the thin slices, it's not a ton of the protein, and coated with the panko, and we sauteed in a mixture of butter and canola oil, so it's not 100% clarified butter, but, you know, you want that little buttery flavoring in there, and that really, if you're doing something simple like that, with only a few ingredients, each one better stand out. We're going to break for news, and then we're going to cook some vegetables. We're doing for the fall, and maybe even help you with kind of a cook ahead and always have some nice vegetables on hand to serve with your protein, Chef Bill's Table.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
This to me is just unnerving to its core.
Republican Senator Lindsey Graham reacting to word from the White House that it's pulling hundreds of U.S. troops back from northern Syria, greenlighting a planned Turkish offensive against the longtime U.S.-backed Kurdish forces there. Graham calling it irresponsible.
To say to the American people ISIS has been destroyed in Syria is not true.
Graham was speaking on Fox and Friends. The president says the U.S. has defeated ISIS and will bring soldiers home rather than fight in endless tribal wars there. A federal judge has just ruled that President Trump cannot stop his accountants from turning over his taxes to Manhattan DA Cyrus Vance Jr., who's probing whether the Trump Organization falsified business records related to so-called hush money payments. This is USA Radio News.
Investments and securities involve the risk of loss.
Investment mistakes? Oh boy, I've seen some doozies.
Ken Fisher, founder and executive chairman of Fisher Investments.
Things like being too conservative, ignoring the long-term erosion of your wealth from inflation, or trying to time the market. And if you're retired or close to being, you may not have enough time to recover. So use your noodle and call for our free guide.
13 Retirement Investment Blunders to Avoid explains how anyone can stumble on the road to retirement, with errors like working with a non-fiduciary advisor or mutual funds with nosebleed-level fees. Call 1-888-FISHER-0 for your free guide. And as a bonus, we'll send you, at no cost, Maximize Your Social Security for Retirement. See how your decisions now can affect this important source of retirement cash flow. Fisher Investments has helped thousands achieve a comfortable retirement.
You could achieve your investment goals without becoming your own worst enemy.
Call 1-888-FISHER-0. That's 1-888-FISHER-0.
CRDB. So our fall vegetables are our favorite one, and I like this combination. And you're using all your tools in the kitchen too, as the owner said. With the fall squash, he says, "Boy, we really earned the squash." My father always liked planting it because you get fairly good yield out of it. Solid, it holds up. You don't even need to keep it refrigerated; just keep it cool. And it's one of the one of the fruit vegetables, got seeds inside. There is a little bit of work to it though, but coaxing the flavors out of there, the sweetness. You could use, of course, butternut's the easiest one to deal with, but our Jim Sansone brings us some caboclo, an orange, kind of it's a spaghetti squash, but you can actually, they're smaller, you can actually peel them and cube them instead of shredding them apart. Carnival, all these, we've done white acorn, and they have different textures, slightly different flavors. So take the skin off the outside, and then you have to scoop out the seeds. Now the seeds, if you like them, you wash them off and dry them and roast them in the oven, a little salt and whatever seasoning. You can make them spicy, but just like pumpkin seeds. But they're nice little snack or a topping for salad. And my guys in the kitchen sometimes, when we're cleaning a bunch of squash, they'll save them and toast them up. Nice little snack. So we need to roast the squash, and we do it at 400 plus degrees because you're using a sheet pan. When you're putting your vegetables into roast, you want to make sure they're just in one layer. You don't want them piled up on top of each other. You want them to cook evenly. And we will just use a little bit of canola oil and salt and pepper because the squash, when you roast vegetables, you're losing some of the moisture in there, and you get a little more intense flavor. I mean, you can steam squash, you can saute it, you can boil it, if you're making a soup. But really the best flavor is from roasting. So we have the roasted mixed squash, and they're all different shades of orange and white and yellow. And then we combine it with braised broccoli rabe. So you've got two methods going on here. And broccoli rabe, it's not really tiny broccoli. It's more of a bitter green. And so, just like bitter greens, you need to blanch it first, and it needs a fair amount of salt, and you want to kind of get some of that bitterness out of there. Now, we tried steaming it, which does par cook it, but it doesn't. You need the water. You need to dilute that bitterness that's in there. So a good pot of boiling water and salt, so you can just taste a slight saltiness of the water. It doesn't have to be seawater, but like when you're cooking pasta, you taste the water. People look at me like I'm crazy, and just try it and make sure I can taste a little bit of salt. So the broccoli rabe, you get a fairly good yield out of it. You can use all but the very ends of the stems, just like asparagus. And we cut it into about 1.5 inch or so pieces. And so you've got the flower part, you've got the stalk part. We put it in the boiling water, and you want to cook it until the stalk part starts to get a little tender. Then we drain it and run cold water over. We don't shock it. You don't need the ice thing. Don't like to scare my vegetables anyway, right? It's not nice. Cool water, cool them off, and so the braising part comes. We use olive oil is the best for this. A little bit of chopped onion and some garlic. Get those nice and soft, and then add the broccoli rabe, just like you would spinach or escarole or any kind of bitter green like that, and season it again. Now, if you'd like a little spice to it when you're sautéing the vegetable, the onion and garlic, throw a little pinch of chili flake. Otherwise, salt and pepper. Now, we will add a little water if you want to keep it vegetarian. Or you could use chicken broth. We use a lot of times as kind of liquid salt. And that way you don't have to worry about little salt pockets on the food. The chicken broth, as it cooks down, of course, it's salty, and then that kind of seasons the food evenly. So check for your salt and pepper. So you have your braised. Now you do that a few minutes until the stalks get nice and tender. And so now you've got two vegetables here. What we do is we'll chill each of those down separately and then combine them. So now you've got the sweetness of the squash. You've got the slight bitterness of the broccoli rabe. And when we warm that up, you'll either saute it, you can bake it. You could use it as a base for pasta. You could fold it into a risotto. But at the end, we put a little bit of fresh grated Asiago. And you've got that nice, the little bit of sharpness. And what the heck, you know, that's a good way to get people to eat vegetables, right? Put cheese on it. But not like a cheese sauce, just a little sprinkle of it. And you've got that little saltiness at the end that really a nice counterpoint to the sweetness of the squash. Yeah, so either of these two vegetables would stand on their own, roasted squash or broccoli rabe. When you mix them together, you've got just this, again, you could, if you have the components, now broccoli rabe, you could blanch it and freeze it, which we've done. And actually freezing, you know, it softens it up even a little bit more. And you can do the same with squash. You know, if you're not going to use it for a few days, when the squash is roasted and cooled down, you can put it in freezer bags. Squeeze the air out of it, and you've got something you can use. You've got your own homemade instant vegetables, right? Because that's usually what takes the time with cooking, besides shopping, of course. Prepping the vegetables, cutting them, trimming them, and whenever you freeze things, most of the time you should blanch them anyway, set the color and texture, and go from there. But that's the star vegetable. Now we're roasting carrots also, and we buy for this a tricolor carrot. They're a little smaller and beautiful. They're purple, yellow, red. Besides the orange, the purple ones actually when you cut them, they're a little bit of the yellow carrot inside, and they look almost like they're burnt. And we serve them roasted, and, you know, and the first time the server looks at it and says, you overcooked this. No, that's a purple carrot. The yellow ones are very, very sweet. It's odd, you know, if you've worked with parsnips before, it looks like a white carrot. But these are actually, it's a white carrot, tastes like a carrot. And we do these, we cut them actually into almost 3-inch sticks, like you would for a crudité. And why? Because when you're roasting, you need a little bit of thickness. You want that caramelization. You want, if you cut them too small, they're going to cook before they brown, and it's not going to be the same. So, again, the 400-plus degree oven, 425 or so, we toss them in some canola oil. And the seasoning, I use, again, salt and pepper, but a little powdered ginger and a little bit of cumin, and coriander, the dried cilantro, the coriander ground. Those slight spicing like that. I've seen carrots, harissa, a nice chili paste, and you serve it with a yogurt. These come off pretty well. We used to season sweet potatoes this way, and it would work very well, cut into big wedges if you like sweet potatoes. Toss them in the seasoning, and when we're roasting, instead of just oiling the pan, I like to toss the vegetables with the seasoning and the oil. And what I'll do first is make kind of a seasoned oil and then coat the vegetables thoroughly, toss them in a bowl, and then you can spread them out in a single layer and roast them. You could turn them halfway through if you like. I go 15 minutes and then check. And then there's no set time because depending on the thickness and the original texture of the product. So it's really one of those things where you do it in the first 15 minutes and then start checking about every 5 or 6 minutes after that. Make sure things are cooked. They will continue to cook on the pan when you take them out of the oven, but for the most part, you want to make sure they're not al dente. You want to be able to bite through them. But as in the case of squash, you don't want it so cooked that they turn to mush. That fine line there. Brussels sprouts, the other little darling. We're reading. Featuring vegetables in restaurants that you never thought would work. But Brussels sprouts, beautiful this time of year. Two ways to do them. We roast them now. We used to do a hashed Brussels sprouts, which I've converted people that thought they never liked Brussels sprouts into when you try them hashed and braised. Very, very good. Brings out the sweetness. Hashing them means, you know, we're going to cut the sprouts into thin slices, just like if you were slicing them for coleslaw. A little fine chopped onion and some shredded carrot. Just shred some carrot on the box grater. And saute the Brussels sprouts, a little oil. We have a little bit of the onion. And, again, salt, pepper. I add a little water just to create some moisture. And the carrots toward the end. And you don't want to cook them, you know, too much. You want to, ideally, they would still have some good bright color to them. But you cook them till the cabbage till they're thoroughly cooked, and then cool them down. It's something, again, you can serve chilled. I've served them on crostinis before with a little bit of seasoned ricotta. A great side dish for salmon, but perfect with that hashed Brussels sprouts. But this, you know, the fall will roast them. And roasting, again, now here we take the oven down a little bit lower. So what happens is the leaves can burn on the Brussels sprouts. We cut them in half, you know, make sure they're washed and cleaned. Again, coat them with oil. And these we just use a little bit of salt. But we'll do the oven to 375 because we want the cabbage to cook before it gets too brown. You can always brown at the end, but if you brown them too fast, too early, you still have to finish cooking them, and then you end up losing too much. Now, I know some chefs will fry the outer leaves till they're crispy, and they're very good like that, too. And if they do get a little charred, don't worry. It does taste good. But really just the salt on there, you can put a little pepper if you like, but toss them in the oil and roast them, and make sure they're cooked. Now, if you're going to reheat them, of course, you don't have to cook them all the way through, but you want still, again, that texture. You want to be able to, you don't want it hard and raw. Now, with this, we'll, of course, bacon makes everything taste good. It's just like we put cheese on vegetables. You put a little bacon on them, some diced crumbled diced bacon on top afterwards. Seems to be what people like. We do a maple vinaigrette. We actually use this on our harvest salad. And this also makes a nice drizzle for the Brussels sprouts. Some people use a balsamic syrup. You want that, you know, the cabbage and the salty bacon. You know, you want the all the senses. You want a little sweetness. So, maple syrup, 4-to-1 ratio of maple syrup to olive oil. So, if you had a cup of virgin olive oil, it would do a quarter cup of maple syrup. And then about a half cup of balsamic vinegar, 1 or 2 teaspoons of Dijon mustard, and a teaspoon of pepper. Now, we don't salt this. You can salt to taste, but if you're using it on salty food, keep that in mind. But whisk this together and keep it in the refrigerator. It's a good salad dressing, but it's great on Brussels sprouts. We've got to stop for a break here. A couple of messages we have, and then we'll be back at the table.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Well, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Turn to the table, Chef Bill's table at WHCRDB. So those are our few seasonal vegetables, ideas for you, roasting, braising, a little bit of dressing. Also now, of course, if you've got the last of your harvest to contend with, I know my sister was asking me about eggplants because I got all the eggplant coming in. So eggplant is one of those you can grill it before you put your grill away for the winter. Brush it with oil. I would do the slices lengthwise. You could do them crosswise if you like, but lengthwise you could be doing a little less handling. You can peel it or not. The peel's edible, it's fine. And you get it about halfway cooked on the grill. You can get your nice crosshatch there, you know, arranging so it looks pretty. And then set it, let it come to room temperature on a tray, and you can take these slices and a little wax paper or deli sheets in between, a few layers, and put it in the freezer, and now you have this grilled eggplant that you could make rollatines with. I like to layer it always for Thanksgiving. I do a lasagna where I use the eggplant instead of pasta, so thin slices of eggplant that are grilled or roasted. This and no flour, so it's gluten-free, it's vegetarian, it's the whole idea. Thanksgiving, if you have that one dish that kind of helps with people with dietary concerns and really works well with the eggplant instead of the pasta noodles. You know, it's probably, you know, it's a little more work, but we like to grill it and make sure it's fairly well cooked. But grilling and freezing, or you could even bread it, just like if you like eggplant parmesan. Makes, of course, a great sandwich besides a meal. You could take the flour, the egg wash, the breadcrumbs, and you could brown them if you like, or just let them, you know, pack them in layers, again, some paper between them so they don't get soggy, and put them in the freezer. I would say brown them first. It would be a lot easier to use later on. Then when you need them, you can just take them out of the freezer. And the other suggestion I had, of course, is make a nice caponata, eggplant relish. It's kind of a sweet and sour. Now this you could keep chilled for a while, but you could also freeze it with the olives and capers and little red wine vinegar and sugar, tomatoes. You could use the last of your good tomatoes also. But caponata would be also a nice addition. I mean, we used to serve that with, we used to warm it up with a whole wheat pasta and the caponata. And I would use either an aged provolone or even a ricotta salata, the aged ricotta. Ricotta is always this creamy, fluffy cheese, but when you can age it, and it kind of crumbles like feta. A little flavor to it. Either one of those cheeses would go well with that. And, of course, the last of your tomatoes. If you, I know one restaurant I worked, the owner's cousin used to, she would buy the bushels of what they called soup tomatoes, very, very ripe, almost falling apart. And she, we had the machine to pass, what do you call, passat in Italian, to pass the tomatoes that separates the skins and seeds from the puree. And we had it actually motorized because that's how we made our tomato sauce. We didn't just use the chopped tomatoes. We even the canned tomatoes, we always passed them and got the seeds out. It makes a nice, sweeter sauce. Seeds get a little bitter in there. But she would can them in the jars, put a pinch of salt and a basil leaf in each jar, and put the quart jars with the, you know, and we cook them in the water bath until the lid seals up there. It's a lot of work to can things. Freezing is a lot easier. You could make the puree and freeze it in pint or quart containers. Or what I like to do is roast them, especially if you have some plum tomatoes. And these, we just cut them into quarters or sixths or eighths. Again, toss them with some olive oil. We like a little garlic with these and thyme and salt and pepper. Roast them in the oven until they're about, these you only do about half cooked. What you're doing is, again, driving out some of the moisture. You're going to, I used it in the wintertime with the commodity, the plum tomatoes. You know, it's funny, they, you know, we just had to switch over from the Jerseys to the regular ones, and it's a big difference. So these need, you know, sometimes need a little help. So we roast the plum tomatoes, and it intensifies the flavor. But once they're roasted, you can pack them in containers, and I would put oil, and I would use, you know, I mean, canola oil would be fine, unless you really, you want to, you know, spend the extra money on olive oil. But make sure they're submerged in oil, and then put the lid on and put that in the freezer. You can freeze those tomatoes in oil. Now, I would pack them very tightly, so you're not using that much oil, but the oil is going to keep the air off. You won't get oxidation, and you've got this nice now, you, when you need roasted tomatoes, you can use them, and the oil tastes good too. I mean, you can use every part of it. You've got this nice flavored oil that you could use for finishing or for cooking. You know, so it beats the heck out of a sun-dried tomato. And, of course, kale. Good winter vegetable. We've done where we chop kale, and if you need to freeze that, by all means, it, you don't even need to blanch it. We would just put it raw, chopped in the freezer, the freezer bags, and then when you need it, that kind of already helps soften it up too. So sometimes when you buy vegetables, if you're not buying something all pre-cut or frozen, you know, those things, they're going to cost you a lot of money. You buy the bulk vegetables though, and you say, oh, I don't need that much. I got too much. You can always preserve it. And we did that when I was young. We would, if things from the garden or even go to the regional market, and we would do the blanching and freezing. And you need, you know, if you have a good freezer, not just a little one over top, for, you know, usually a separate freezer is nice, and start saving the harvest. You know, for a day of cooking, you know, say, all right, I'm going to dedicate this time. I'm going to, you know, produce a lot of prep as we do. That's what we do in the restaurant every day. We prep up for the for service. It takes hours.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
protesters greet the acting U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security as Kevin McAleenan tries to deliver the keynote remarks at Georgetown Law School's 16th Annual Immigration Law and Policy Conference.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for the kind introduction, Andrew. And for your commitment to dialogue and conversation.
After trying to start that speech three times, McAleenan walked off the stage and the forum continued without him. One of President Trump's biggest supporters on Capitol Hill is condemning his decision to start withdrawing U.S. forces from northern Syria. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham telling Fox News the decision's impulsive, short-sighted, and irresponsible. Graham says he does not agree with President Trump that ISIS has been defeated there. And this is USA Radio News.
I'm at the American Veterinary Medical Association annual convention in Washington, D.C. with Dr. Barbara Natterson Horowitz, evolutionary biologist and physician.
There's a form of fainting that happens when people get stressed because the excitement triggers a slowing of the heart. Why this happened didn't make sense. The heart shouldn't slow down. The heart should speed up when there's fear. But what I've learned by working with veterinarians and learning about how animal hearts work is that young animals, when they are scared, sometimes their heart rates get very, very low, and that causes them to be very still. And when wild animals become very still, it often makes them safer from predators. One possible hypothesis is that slowing of the heart rate in response to fear in our species is actually an evolutionary echo from our vertebrate ancestors, for whom the slowing of the heart was life-saving.
There's more valuable information at avma.org.
We were expecting gas prices to keep rising for a while after attacks on Saudi oil refineries, but the average price for gasoline across the U.S. has fallen by 0.3 cents this week, down to $2.65 a gallon. Here's John Clemens.
Patrick DeHaan of GasBuddy.com tells us that $2.65 national average is actually a 27-cent decrease from last year.
Average prices across the country stand at $2.65, a small increase of 0.3 cents from a week ago. Overall, prices remain 27 cents lower than last year when they averaged $2.91 a gallon.
I'm John Clemens.
A fight over President Trump's taxes is stalled again as an appeals court has agreed to temporarily block today's earlier ruling that Trump turn over 8 years of returns as part of an investigation into so-called hush money payments made to a porn star. Remember to find us online anytime. We're at usaradio.com.
America's built and based on liberties and freedoms. Liberty HealthShare brings that to healthcare. The liberty of choosing your own doctor. The liberty of choosing your own hospital. Liberty HealthShare makes healthcare affordable to millions of Americans. Ignite your liberty. Sharing plans starting at $199 for a single, $399 for a couple, and no matter how big the family, only $529. That's $529 for the entire family. To learn how you can save, go to lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com.
The Department of Defense says it's estimating 22% of all combat casualties from Iraq and Afghanistan involve brain injuries. A doctor at the Department of Veterans Affairs says it may take a while for veterans to realize that they might even have a brain injury, so it could take a while before they get themselves fully checked out. They're urging vets who think they may have a brain injury to come in right away to a VA facility for a screening. A longtime rapper is now holding worship services rather than concerts. Kanye West, who recently announced he'd be switching to exclusively gospel and spiritual music, has been traveling the country holding church-like concerts, which include choir singers and other musicians. He held one on Saturday outside a shopping center in Salt Lake City, Utah.
We can simplify our lives by only being afraid of one thing, and that's God.
West taking the stage late in the worship service and performing one song called Jesus Walks. It had been on his 2004 album, The College Dropout. West also prayed and testified to the crowd about his own religious journey, speaking a little politics and discussing what he called the dangers of social media. Estimates were between 7 and 10,000 people attended that event. Next time you're online, remember to check us out there. We're at USA.